My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Johnny.
Glad to be here tonight and glad to be sober. Glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink of alcohol or a mood altering chemical in my system since sometime between before the fourth day of November, 1961. I haven't had any near beer Prozac either. Kind of makes me an oddball in a lot of circles. And I always have considered some type of a privilege to be allowed to even sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't ever have been able to get it into my head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was lucky enough to get here on a fateful day and find you people and get sober and stay that way. I have been sober. 40 years ago tonight, I was sitting in a penitentiary waiting for tomorrow. And tomorrow, 40 years ago, I walked out of a penitentiary. And nothing new about me walking out of a penitentiary. I've been walking out of penitentiaries and institutions and reform schools since I was 7 years old. Well, this time, there was something different. 19 months prior to that, a group of people called themselves Alcoholics Anonymous walked into an old Quonset hut of a building and presented an attraction to me that I had never seen or understood in my life. And whatever it was, they wore the package of Alcoholics Anonymous wrapped in such a beautiful ribbon, I'd have died and went to hell for it. I still have that same feeling today about the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would die and go to hell for the piece of the ribbon and the package that your life is wrapped in, because it's such a wonderful, joyous thing to be able to stand here. And, you know, when they had that countdown, I looking around the room and you know, a lot of these people come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I see a lot of people's lives change, and lights going in their lives, and things that happen. And I feel very blessed to be a part of that and to realize that the same God that looks down on me in the morning in California looks down on you in the morning in Oklahoma or Texas or Ohio or wherever you may be. Because I've come to understand that there's one encompassing God that takes care of everything. Why not? Which one of us are anything so special in life that God picked us out of all the rest of the world to be special? What kind of a God would that be anyhow? It's not a God that I could live with. It was the God my grandmother taught me about, who punished little boys who were bad. There's nothing special about me at all. I've been given the privilege to stand sober in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was given a set of instructions that didn't make sense to me, and a book that outlined the instructions that has never gone out of print, thank God. I want to tell you a statistic that I have. I read about it the other day in Hello Central, and it's amazing to me because I think about things like this. I don't think about a lot of things, but I think about stuff like this. They said that there's the 20th million book of Alcoholics Anonymous been published. 20 million books. This magnificent book. That, oh, well. 20 million books have been printed in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you, depending on who you talk to, they tell you that in a given day there's 2 million sober alcoholics in the world. You know what my thought is about that? Where are the other 18 million? Where are the other 18 million people? That's what I wonder. I don't worry so much about the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wonder what it was and why it was that when I sat in that room that day in November of 1959 when I came to my first meeting, what it was about that particular moment in my life that pushed me over the fence. And for the life of me, the only thing I could come up with was the people. Why in God's world would people do stuff like this? What do they get out of doing this? What are these people doing? I didn't have a clue. But it was nothing new to me. I never had a clue about much anything before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know where my disease come from. I tell you, don't. I don't know where it come from. I don't know How you get it? I know you can't inherit it. And I know you can't give it to anybody. Nobody else has ever figured out where it comes from either. We got geniuses trying to figure that thing out. All I know is that I discovered one day that I had it, and my life has never been different since then. It's been an entirely different world that I lived in. Now, I'm glad to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. Most of you know a little over 40-some years ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement, a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Because of a loving God who expressed himself in our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. If I don't get nothing out of this deal, I guess I could live with that all the way home tomorrow. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you that's where alcohol took me to. Oh, God, I'd love to tell you that. I love to tell you it was anything but what it was. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get here. That's all. It kept me alive long to be sitting in that room or sitting on that yard that day in a place very much like this and follow some people across the room into an old Quonset hut of a building. It kept me alive long enough to do that because if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I'm a misfit. Always been one. Always will be one. I think it's kind of, everybody knows I'm a great baseball fan. I had a lot of talent to play baseball, and I was the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for a couple of years running. Now, it's interesting, Larry, last night, comparing this deal here to a baseball game. Larry's the leadoff man. And everybody knows you got to get the guy to second base, so we sacrificed the Al-Anon to get him to second base. We left Naomi Standard on second or third, somewhere around there. We got to try to get her over there. But Alcoholics Anonymous is a fun, wonderful place. I was a confused kid all my life. I don't know if I was born alcoholic or not. I don't know. Like I told you, I don't know where it comes from. I just seemed to be born needing an answer. The problem with needing an answer is I didn't know what the problem was. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. I don't know what's wrong with me. I know there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I know a lot of everybody in my family drank whiskey, so I don't understand. I ain't had a drink, so I don't know what that is. I don't like these people who drink whiskey. They drink whiskey and go to penitentiaries. They drink whiskey and work in them whorehouses on the other side of the tracks. My mother and father get drunk and beat each other up. I was talking to some people about it. I was talking to Sean about it this afternoon. I'm a kid. I'm living in a little town in Kansas as a young child, and my mother and father would be out, and I knew they were coming in because I could hear them coming. And I'm laying there in terror against the wall in this little one-room shack that we lived in behind my older brother. I'm frightened and terrified, and I'm laying there, and I know they're coming because they're talking. I know they're drunk. They don't come in sober. They come in drunk. And they start, my mother's a little five-foot-high Irish woman, who's drunk, is meaner than a bulldog, and got a mouth like a bankrupt sailor or something. Just, and I hear, you know, she's picking a fight with the old man, and he's trying to stagger along and not fight, and pretty soon I'm there terrified, and the thing that really gets me going, I hear that play shouldn't play. And I don't know what it is, but the terror in me rose up out of behind my brother, and I charged my old man, and he picked me up and threw me across the room against the wall. And time and time and time again, I bounced off that wall and went right back at him again. And I didn't understand that for a long, long time, and he would say things to me, "Cry, you little bastard, cry." And I looked at him and said, "No, I'll never cry. I'll never cry. I'll never shed a tear. I'll never have any emotion. People like you drive me crazy." But what alcohol did in me when watching people drink alcohol, watch my uncles and my aunts and my grandfather and my mother and my father drink alcohol, I only saw one thought, I'm not going to drink. See, I had a ringside seat watching whiskey destroy people's lives. My reaction to that was, I ain't going to drink. I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to step out in the world, have something, do something, be something. Find out where I belong out there. Find the answer to this thing called life. I'm going to look for this way out of this. Start looking for a deal out. I started looking for this thing, looking out of this deal for this problem of mine. Long time before I ever got to Alcoholics Anonymous, before I ever took. I'm looking for an answer. Showed up one day, I guess it was, my grandmother, first person I ever saw who was out of herself. She lived until she was 9 years old, never took a drink of alcohol, smoked a cigarette in her life. Grandma wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been sober over 40 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. You should have had a couple, Granny. Make you feel better from time to time. I was sitting there listening to Kelly talk today. I thought, Jesus Christ, Kelly, why don't you just take a drink for Christ's sake? I mean, that's the answer to everything, ain't it? I mean, Jesus, take a drink and split. I mean, what the hell, let them have it. Don't just split, take a drink and go. I had an idea, because I don't know what's wrong with me. You understand? I have an idea that all I'm going to have to do is go where Grandma goes and do what Grandma does, be like Grandma. I'm not like Grandma. My grandmother's not an alcoholic. I didn't know that. I didn't know my grandmother was saddled with this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. She wasn't saddled. My grandmother got everything she needed out of her church. So not knowing, not armed with that information, I went and said to my grandmother's church with her and waited for it to happen to me. That's what kind of reminds me of it. They get it on there in Kansas in some of these tents. I'm telling you that. I mean, they get the rolling and the kicking and carrying on down there. And I watched them. It was kind of interesting, really, to watch them. Ain't happened to me. I don't know. Didn't know for years later until I was in therapy that had scarred me. Didn't realize any of that. You know, I don't remember. I don't remember sitting around wishing to say I had a bad life. I didn't like them people. You know, I didn't understand anything out of it at all. I didn't understand all this kind of psychobabble nonsense you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous today of, oh, victim. My inner child. I found my inner child. A lesbian. I killed that child. I thought I'd just pass along some information for you. I sat on a back porch in my grandfather's house one day and watched my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. My grandfather was a bootlegger. He made whiskey, and he sold whiskey, and he drank whiskey. That's what Grandpa did. And my grandfather set his fruit jar down one day, and I'm sitting there playing with my grandfather. He took off and went somewhere, and I picked up and took a drink of it. That's all he did. The next couple of minutes of my life would make me an alcoholic. You see, I took a drink, and then the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. You see, I had this abnormal reaction to alcohol that's limited to alcoholics of my type. Our book talks about it in great length. That alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for most of the people, maybe 9 out of the other 10 people in the world who drink it. It has a wonderful effect on me. It goes down inside of me and stills the madness. It creates some type of an atmosphere. I don't give a damn what's going on in the world. It's all right here. I'm not good enough to be over there, but I'm better than being over here. I'm okay right here. It's just, that's what alcohol does for me. A wonderful thing to an alcoholic. My sponsor says it changes your perception of the reality, and I suppose it does. It makes everything okay, I suppose. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death. The thing that got me is what happened to alcoholics of my type once I take a drink of alcohol. And it only happened to alcoholics of my type. It doesn't happen to drinkers. It doesn't happen to people who have drug problems. Doesn't happen to a lot of people. It only happens to alcoholics of my type, as written in our book. See, once I put alcohol into my system, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. Then and only then. Because I took a drink of alcohol at the ripe old age of 7 years old. What happened to me at 7 years old happened to me at 27. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I traveled around out there. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to Nut House, if you really want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it all you got. You got to work at being an alkie. I mean, God, you got to get it on. I mean, you don't just, oh, Lordy. I'm an alcoholic. you got to end up with things like rusty zippers. A friend of mine texted say you have to wake up with the roof of your mouth sunburned. You're just My old sponsor used to say you have to wake up like this, walk around like this, where you've slept with your head under the armrest. I mean, you got to get it on. I mean, you don't have to be much to be a drug addict, for Christ's sake. All you got to do is shoot some dope. That's all. You don't want to be a drug addict no more? Don't shoot no more dope. Very simple. You can't pour enough whiskey in somebody who's not an alcoholic to make them an alcoholic. Can't do that. You couldn't pour enough whiskey in my grandmother to make her an alcoholic. But I became one when I put it in there. You see, you can't be an alcoholic if you haven't drank alcohol. Yet alcohol is not the problem for the alcoholic. Isn't that amazing? The most amazing thing I know of, most consequential, it's goofy. You know, at one time, Larry talked about it last night after being sober for a period of time. Not one time did I ever walk out of one of them institutions and say to myself things like, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol? I never said to myself, have a drink, Johnny, and go out and kill your baby brother. Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and destroy your mother's life? Why don't you go out and tear her heart out one more time? Why don't you go out there and run roughshod over that neighborhood and maim and kill and do all the things that people like you do out there in them streets? Go out and do that, Johnny. Have a drink and go do that. No, I never did that. I never thought to myself, I want to get drunk. I never took a drink of alcohol to get drunk. I never took a drink of alcohol to go party. I never took a drink of alcohol to get out of it. I shot heroin to get out of it. I took a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time to go, whew. That's why alcoholics drink after being sober for a period of time. But see, that's all it takes. All it takes is for that 1 week moment, that period of restlessness and irritability and discontentment that Dr. Silkworth talked about, to put me into a place where I need to have some type of relief. Once I do that, I'm dead. I have never quit drinking. I have never sat down to myself and said, I'm going to knock this off. I just run at it. I mean, I took off. Somebody stopped me. You know, they make a big deal out of the world sometimes about intervention. Hell, the Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about it in 1940, for Christ's sake. They'll intervene in your life if you get out there and play around with them. I mean, they will. I talked to somebody today, I said, it's kind of a hopeless feeling, handcuffed like this, flying through the air with your head first going into the armrest of a police car. If I'd have known then what I know now, I'd have hired somebody with a video camera. I'd be a very wealthy man. I sit on a street corner one day on a Pearl Firm Reform School, and I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. I'm one of them strange people who start on wine and work down. Cheap wine, too. It ain't easy. I'm drinking this stuff, and I'm hanging around my little gang and my little gang of gangsters, or want-to-be gangsters, or hope-to-be gangsters, or whatever we were at that moment. And I'm drinking this wine, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, won't you try these? He gave me some pills. I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-lax. That's all I can tell you. There's no telling what we could hear from places like this. But I imagine what kind of an Andy you'd be. Let your imagination soar. I do sometimes. A couple of years later, I'm sitting on the same street corner for another reform school. I'm hanging around my little gang. I'm eating these pellets, and I'm drinking this cheap wine, and the guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out there in the streets, And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy whatever comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. The reason for that is, see, I'm selfish and self-centered and self-serving. I'm a taker of things, a user of people. I'm a loser. I spent my entire lifetime living like that. And to sum total, at the ripe old age of 27 years old, I came to in that cell in solitary confinement, a maximum security penitentiary with nobody left upon the face of the earth to send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. I didn't have any right to have them back then. I don't have any right to have them back today. I don't have any right whatsoever. I don't have any choices about what I do. When I had rights, I had to defend them. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unwarranted gift I received from the God I discovered sitting with people like you. I don't know all those kind of things, as I'm sitting in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. I don't remember anything about it all. I just remember that shortly thereafter, I'm sitting on a knoll like we were at today taking pictures. I'm talking to some of my righteous partners. And we saw some women walk across the yard. And I got up and followed them. I followed them as though quantity out of a building, and I sit down in the back row. And moved in and sat down in the back row, and what I'd lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on, because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sake. And I'm hip, really. I'm so hip the balls of my feet tickle me when I walk. And I sat there and looked at this clown sitting next to me, and I looked up on the backboard. I saw two big gates. I thought I was in an anti-aircraft brigade, for Christ's sake. I said to him, "What's this?" He said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." I sunk down in my seat. I knew by seeing the big gangster hang around with him winos. We've been talking about gangsters. Dope fiend! Dope fiend, God. Doesn't that make addicts seem kind of candy ass to you? Does to me. I don't know what's wrong. I haven't got a clue. If you'd have put a lie detector test on my arm that day and said, "Are you an alcoholic?" I said, "No, I'm not." If you'd insisted, I'd have hit you. I was not a nice person when I got here. Matter of fact, I'm a violent, crazy person who attacks and destroys for no reason whatsoever. Corner me, I'm a wild animal. Corner me, I'll destroy you in a moment. Physically, mentally, or any way that I can. And walk away with no remorse whatsoever. That's what I came here. That's what came to your meeting that day. That's what sat there in that meeting. Staring at the answer that I'd sold my soul for. I don't recognize the answer. I don't know what the problem is. How are you going to recognize the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is? I don't know what it is. I'm sitting there. I'm looking at these crazy people. I don't understand them either. More women come in there, talk. I mean, they must have been 30 or 40. Old people. I mean, I'm hip. I'm running around with some Sharpies, you know, wherever they are. Well, I wait for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. They got up and threw me a curve. One of them said she drank for a long time. Looked at her. Knew she'd been somewhere for a long time. Said so, too. So I used to drink. I said, "I bet you did. Bad stuff, too." I know everything when I get here. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know a lot of things about nothing. Know everything about everything. Don't know what's wrong with me, but I know about everything. I'm fascinated by these people. I can't, you know what these people, got up on Sunday morning, bought their own gasoline, got in their cars, little rattle-trap cars, weren't any freeways or highways going up there in those days. Drove up into the mountains, 180 miles maybe. Spent all day, 2 hours, talked to a room full of people, didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Let me tell you how sick that is. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Oh, but I'm hip. If I'd be that much smarter, I'd be dead now. You'd have another speaker here. I'm fast. I don't understand these people. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand them. I can't understand them. I've seen people like this. I don't hang around with people like this, for Christ's sake. These people are givers. People like me don't hang around with givers. We hang around with takers. That's why we're all losers. We just hang around with takers, and we eat each other up. We're like a bunch of vampires, sucking the life out of one another. And when we get through with that, we just cast them aside and go to another group of people. And sum total, if you live long enough, pursue that fantasy into the gates of insanity or death, pretty soon you ain't got nothing left. And maybe you get lucky and sit on a grassy knoll sometime and walk into a room full of people trying to look for another group of people to hate. And you can't figure them out. You don't know why you hate them. You don't know why you like them. You can't figure them out at all. They don't give you any reason. They don't understand them, so you ask them questions. What do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You like to look at the animal in the cages? What's your deal anyhow? And they give you these deep AA answers that just drive you crazy. They say things like, well, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. You ponder that for periods of time. Think about it for weeks upon time. Because the intellect is such, and the ego is such, that it must have some reward for the goodness that comes to your life. Because, after all, you did it. I did this. I did that. Look at this. I came and I stayed and I did this in AA. And look how wonderful I am today. That's the ego talking. We want credit. It demands credit. Because it cannot be satisfied and recognized that you have nothing to do with it whatsoever. That you show up here and something happens to you. You don't show up, nothing happens to you. Half measures don't avail you nothing. Don't even get you in the door. I don't know that. I don't know that. I'm fascinated. I sit in a meeting long enough. See, people talk about it all week and talk about going to meetings, showing up, suiting up, and showing up, and waiting for something to happen. I sit in a room one day. It was my day. The day I'd live my lifetime for, probably, because it's the day that changed my life entirely. I sit in the back row back there on my throne of contempt. I had no difference. My collar was still up. My shades were still on. I had my arrogance and my anger and my bitterness and my hostility. And those are masqueraded by piles and piles and piles of guilt and fear of atrocities I'd committed. To the point that I couldn't sleep at night. I'd wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats. Nightmares. Standing at graveside beside my handcuffed between detectives while they buried my baby brother. And all these kind of things are going to my mind. I can't erase them anymore. I can't put enough in me to get them anymore. I'm asleep. I'm waking up. I'm crazy. I don't know what's going on. A guy walked into that penitentiary that day, a little guy. You know, somewhere it's been written that angels are messengers of God. This was the ugliest angel you ever saw in your life. I mean, he didn't have wings and halos and all that stuff. He was a little short guy, meaner than a bulldog. Did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. Used to be my baseball coach when I was at San Quentin Pirates star second baseman. He walked in there, and I told him when he walked out of the penitentiary, oh, man, they won't let you make it out there. They won't let you make it out there. I didn't know he'd been going to AA meeting. Here he come walking into me, and I'm looking at this guy, and I'm sitting back here, I'm watching him. And he stood up at a podium, told me something nobody had ever told me. To this day, it makes more sense to me than anything that I know. He said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more. And he's looking at me. Of course, I thought everybody was looking at me, so that didn't make any difference. They never said that. Nobody never said that. Since I'm 7 years old. Every time I got nailed, I'm sitting in front of a therapist or a psychiatrist or a child, whatever you want to call them, and they're all saying the same thing to me, Johnny. If you don't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things, shoot these things, you ain't going to have no problem. What none of them ever took into consideration, I suppose, is that every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times do I want to scream out, I'm good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not an alcoholic, Kelly, I'll never understand why you don't. I mean, geez. We, you know, my lovely wife, Karen, and I were coming back from someplace not long ago. We were in Dallas. We always fly through Dallas. And there was a crowded airplane, and being that I'm a frequent flyer, they kicked us up to first class, and we left the ground, and wheels up, and Stuart and I come running down the aisle with a bottle of wine and poured the lady sitting across the aisle a glass of wine. She promptly curled up and took a nap. I watched that very intently for a while. Tried to get back to reading my book. With all, I'd have to glance over there at her. Pretty soon, the steward I shook her and said, would you like to have lunch? And she said, yes. She ate her little lunch. And the steward took the tray and curled back up and took a nap. Wine's still sitting there, much like that picture sitting there. I don't know what it's doing for that woman, but it's driving me crazy. I'm watching her intently. I'm drinking coffee. Finally, we got wheels down. We're going to land in Long Beach, and the steward and I come up to her and said, would you like to finish your wine, lady? And she said, oh, no. If I drank that, it'd make me sleepy. I'm grab her and strangle her, for Christ's sake. Why don't you drink the goddamn wine? What's wrong with you, crazy person? Upset I am that you're not drinking that wine. Drink the goddamn wine. Drink it. See, I don't understand why she didn't drink that wine. Not at all. But see, she would never have understood it if I'd have drank it and Shanghai'd the plane in Mexico either. That's what I'm saying. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. Because an alcoholic talks to another alcoholic and get them to do something here and gains their confidence by saying that magic word to the alcoholic. I understand how you feel. I understand that. Let me tell you how I happened when I was in that situation. You know why I'm sober? Because I went up to that little man that day after the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and said to him very simply, how do you learn how to live? I didn't say, how do you get sober? I knew how to get sober. You got arrested. There's no problem with that whatsoever. I kept getting sober time and time and time again. I didn't know how to live without it. And he gave me probably the greatest piece of information that anybody can give a new alcoholic when they ask him for information. He told me about a book that was in the library. A book called Alcoholics Anonymous, he said. And he said, if you go get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. And because of some strange thing, maybe it was my time, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. I opened our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, to delve into this thing, to find out what it was this man was talking about, and to see if I could find me within the covers of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was a lost soul. I had no hope anymore. I had no dream. My idea was someday they were going to lock me up and throw the key away on me. Someday I was going to be an old gray-headed guy walking around a pair of carpet slippers locked up in some maximum security penitentiary. Someday somebody was going to blow my brains out on one of them drug deals in the corner somewhere. Maybe the police were going to shoot me down. That was my future. That was my dream. That was all I had left out of life. And so I opened up your book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went into the book to find out how different I was than you, that it wouldn't work for me. But I was going to prove to you it wouldn't, and I was going to be able to throw it back in your face and say, don't you see, my case is different. It won't work. And one day I sat in a room with a man, and I did what our program recovery says is the fifth step, and probably the greatest single event in my life happened to me that day. Right up until this present time. Children being born, grandchildren being born, jobs, wives, kids, everything. The good life, everything. That's the most important moment of my life up to this particular point in my life. Over 40 years ago now. I heard myself say to that man a very simple thing. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. I know what's wrong with me. Not a shadow of my doubt. I've known it for over 40 years, exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have this program. And the reason I couldn't have it is it separated me from you. I'm not quite like you. I'm a little better. A little worse. A little smarter, a little dumber, a little hipper, a little lamer. Well, I never put that in there. But I've always been too hip for my own good. Here I became just like you, alcoholic. It became my great privilege to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 7,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. So I get to do this. Don't have to, get to. Different words. Play on words, but it's different. Big difference. I don't have to do anything. I get to. My privilege to be allowed to share my experience, strength, and hope with people. So on the fourth day of June, 1961, I walked out of a penitentiary for, I hope it's my last time, except as a visitor on panel, to a world I didn't know anything about. Never spent a day in my life out there since I'm 7 years old without some type of a chemical adage in there to give me an edge, to corner and corral my anger and my violence and my hostility. Armed with only one thing. In the 19 months that I'd been an Alcoholics Anonymous and had that magnificent book in my possession, I had, to the best of my ability, completed the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. I had written letters. I had tried to get people to come and see me to make amends to them. I had taken that inventory. I believed in that book. I still believe in that book because people are fallible. My book is always right. Our fellowship is fallible. It's made up of human beings. Our book program is perfect in structure. Perfect in structure. Anybody who will put these steps to work in their life will be better. Anybody. I don't care who you are. Nobody lives so perfectly that these things wouldn't help their lives along. It's a spiritual thing here. Set of actions you do here. They don't realize I'm doing it. Walked out of that thing, went home to see my mother. Mother fell asleep, blind drunk. Picked her up and put her on her couch. Said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, think you should. I'd like to stand and tell you I got sober, and my mom got sober, and my dog got sober, and my cat got sober, and my kids got sober, and we're the sobers. Sober, sober, sober. That's just not my experience. I can't speak to you beyond my experience. And my experience is not that. My experience is not a happy, sober family. My oldest daughter is not alcoholic. My youngest daughter, by her own admission, is. I don't know anything about that. I sit on the sidelines and watch my mother drink herself to death. In the next 30 years, she drank herself to death, and I watched it. Hopeless, powerless to do anything about my mother's drinking. Oh, from time to time, my mother would get in a state of undrunkenness and show up at our meetings. But like all people who are in a state of undrunkenness on the mistaken idea that they're sober, my mother could not stay here because the alcoholic who sits in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and does not take these simple actions is not treating the disease of alcoholism. And if they're like me and they're sitting here not doing the things it says to do, I'm getting constantly worse. I ain't getting any better. Larry talked about it last night. I'm 40-some years worse off as far as successful drinking than I was the day I got here. 40-some years. Progressive illness. Even during long and total periods of absence, my disease gets worse. It just waits for me. Sits out there and waits for me to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, in the wrong set of circumstances, where I need that moment of relief, where I have jacked me off into a corner somewhere, and I'm ready. 40 years, 45 years, 50 babies, home groups, books don't mean nothing at that particular moment in my life if I'm in that position. I'm in there. I watched my mother do that. I sit and watched her. You know what I used to do? I used to go by and drive. I used to go by my mother's house every day, or once a week anyhow. And sometimes she wouldn't be drinking, and sometimes she'd be standing in the kitchen drinking whiskey out of a bottle. My mother drank whiskey out of a bottle. Half pint at a time, because alcoholics drank it by the pint, she told me. One day I went by there to see her, and she was standing in the kitchen, had the bottle up, and I said, get a mom! And left. I watched my mother die from this illness. I know it kills people. I sat at her bedside the day she died and held her hand. That was the last thing this world my mother ever saw. And if you had said to her a moment before she died, aren't you proud of Johnny? Man, look at him. Man, he came out in gangs, he came out in streets, he came out in penitentiaries, he found out he's alcoholic, he joined that A&A thing, and he lives a good life, got a good family, pays his taxes, does all that. Aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? What my mother would have told you? My mother would have said to you without a doubt in her mind, my son is not alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with them Mexicans. That's my mother. You see, I mean, if you talk to some of these psychobabble idiots who've got all this psychobabble in their head, they talk about things. I guess your mama was in a state of denial. Denial is a river in Egypt. Alcoholics aren't in denial. Alcoholics live in a delusion. The delusion spelled out in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, says the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. It doesn't say maybe or put it aside. It says smashed. The idea that somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker, book says. I'm not like other people. I know that. I love Vinoy, but I'm not like Vinoy. I'm an alcoholic. Vinoy's not an alcoholic. I've known her. Take that back. I'm not quite sure. I think she turned left when she should have turned right 32 years ago, but who am I? I love her. You know what I discovered from my mother? It's helped me in great stead. It's kept me in great stead for a long time. I don't have the power to get anybody sober, for Christ's sake. I don't have any power to get them drunk either. What would give me power? I don't have any power. I didn't bring any here. I didn't got any. I got as much power today as I had 40-some years ago when I wandered into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just as much power. My book don't talk about an endless supply of power. My book talks about a daily reprieve. What I got. I got today. I ain't got no yesterdays, no tomorrows. I'm not sober today for what I did 30 years ago, for Christ's sake. I'm not sober because I've been sober 40-some years. I'm not sober because I sponsor people and go to meetings, have a home group, and read the book. I'm sober because I do today what I did 40 years ago. I get up in the morning. I pray to the God I don't understand sometimes. Sometimes I feel alienated from. I read my 24-hour day book, which is non-conference approved material for you purists. And I go to work. It's funny. Go to work. I come home from work and I take a shower and I change clothes and I step out into a brand new world because I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night and I sit in my seat and I stick out my hand and I do what I'm asked to do. I did that 40 years ago. I was taught that by a man who introduced himself to me as my sponsor. He didn't say, would you like a sponsor? Or you better get a sponsor. He said, I am your sponsor. And I said to him, being so slick and intelligent I about the book and my newfound magnificence, what's that? Sponsor. It ain't in the book, babe. He said, no, there is something about being constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. Where do they come up with this stuff, these people? I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He says, why do you ask me? He says, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. See, I'm trying to trap him. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? And I said, then what am I supposed to do? He says, why don't you do what I do? I said to him, what is it that you do? And he gave me another one of them deep answers. Well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. Sponsorship. Monkey see, monkey do. You know, the monkey's got to learn how to do things that the other monkeys know how to do. So they got to hang out with the monkeys who are doing it, whatever the monkeys are doing. I think the most stupidest thing that anybody could ever say, walking Alcoholics Anonymous, thinks they don't need help here. It's the stupidest thing. If you knew how to live, what the hell are you doing here? I mean, if you knew how to stay sober, we don't need to come to AA meetings. I mean, why would you? I mean, what are you, hanging out looking for a score or something, for Christ's sake? I mean, ain't much going on down here in the canyon. Ain't no bushwhacking. I mean, the voice is tired of asking her if you're her baby. Don't ask her about that bushwhacking no more. You get to be my age, you don't worry about it anyhow. You remember once upon a time something happened, but you can't remember what it was. Well, if you really want to know the truth, I'm a young man in an old container. You know, that man literally taught me. His name was Norm Alpe. He's dead now. He died the day before my 22nd birthday. Wednesday, it'll be 18 years since he dropped dead. And I miss him terribly sometimes. But he taught me the very essence of life here. He taught me how to behave around you. Taught me what to do here. I don't know what to do here. I know about books. I know how to read that book. I know how to follow the instructions of that book. I know how to clean up the wreckage of my past. I know how to pray. I know how to do all the things, but I don't know how to be of service to others. I don't know how to be an example about Alcoholics Anonymous, so he taught me in various ways. He said to me, "How long have you been sober, hotshot?" 19 months. He said, "Oh, no, you haven't." He says, "The day you came out is your first day of sobriety." What? I want to go to the club with 19 months and talk to him about it. You know what I mean? He said a very simple thing. In there ain't out here. How wise he was. See, in there, they ring bells for you. They want you to do something, ring a bell. You don't have to work. You don't have to do nothing. You have no pressures. No, nothing. Nothing. They tell you when to get up, when to go to bed, when to go to work, and when to come home, and when to have a visit, when not to have a visit. They tell you when to eat, when not to eat, when to go to sleep, and when to get up. They bring your clothes to you when you're dirty. They take your dirty ones away and bring your fresh ones. You don't have to do nothing. Play a little dominoes and be hit. Wait. See, I didn't know what it was like to have to answer an alarm clock. I didn't know what it was like to have to show up at a job and go to work because I'd never had a job. So he said to me, "Get a job, bum." I said, "I'm not a bum." He said, "What are you?" I said, "I'm an AA member." He said, "No, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. Get a job." He said, "Get off of welfare." Boy, I almost hit him on that. I said, "I ain't never been on welfare. Don't you ever say that to me again." He said, "What do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution?" Oh, he was awful. I got a job, went to work. Somebody stole my first paycheck. You ought to heard me if you think that was. I ranted and raved and jumped and hollered. Caught that guy, he'd be another speaker here tonight, I tell you. I'd be hanging out with a loser somewhere saying, "Ain't over!" Don't ever let any of these idiots tell you that. One person never tell you AA work ain't never been in it. Oh, they've been around it, but they ain't never been in it. They ain't never found here what I found here, I'll tell you that. I found the answer to life here. I found what I was born looking for here. Turned around one day and was all mine. Didn't even know it. Sponsor wouldn't even let me drive a car. Didn't have a car. Didn't have a driver's license. Said, "You can't drive a car." I said, "Why not? I never got arrested for driving a car without a driver's license. Matter of fact, I would have liked to. Only had to do 30 days. Better than 4 or 5 years is a crack norm. I said, why can't I drive a car? He said, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you, Johnny, to think you're going to violate all the rules you want to live by. I said, don't make sense to me, Norm. He said, no. He said, you may drink. Secret message. You may drink. See, I've known I can't. I know I can't take a drink. Because by this time, I've already examined the evidence of the past and saw where drink takes me to. So I don't take a drink. I do what he tells me because he's got the magic word. Time came, I had a job. Time came, I had money to buy a car. Had to get a driver's license to go to work. I guess Larry's showing your driver's license. I got one. I even have a credit card in my pocket with unlimited money. Could you imagine what a drunk that could be if I wanted to get going on it? God, it's scary to even think about that. Here, you want to hold this for me till I leave? An amazing man, this man Norm Alpe was. Not only was a best speaker that Alcoholics Anonymous ever had, he was the best member of AA I've ever known. Right up until and including this moment. You really want to know the truth. He had no price tag on him. That's what I remember more vividly about him than anything. And he believed in the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. He believed in the purity of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the simplicity of love without profit or motivation here. He believed in that, and he installed in me, and it still burned deeply within me this very day. He installed the idea in me that you don't do anything for anything here. You just do it, and something happens. You don't do it for a motive of staying sober. I don't do this to stay sober, for Christ's sake. I live sober. I don't put myself in jeopardy. I don't hang around with people who are slipping around there and carrying on out there. I don't go in bars to see what they're doing. I don't go in a nightclub to see if they're still there. They are. I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to work. Once in a while, I go to movies with my lovely wife. Play a little golf from time to time. Go to work. Go take my little 10-year-old grandson out. Watch him, eat him. Won't go watch him play Little League. Yell at the manager. He told him, you know what he told? You know my little grandson told the manager of your Little League team? He said, I want to play second base. And the manager said, well, why is that so important to you? You're out there in right field. He said, I want to play second base. He says, why? He says, my grandpa played it in prison. Manager put him on second base. Because Grandpa was standing there flashing his tattoos. I stand there, I can't tell you about the blessings that have been bestowed on me because they're numerous. I can't, you know, I haven't risen to the heights of anything. I just become a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. You know, I had a sponsor who, this sponsor of mine was, with an ego like mine, it has to be smashed from time to time. Book says it has to be smashed. I have to be smashed. My sponsor used to keep me down to size. Because I have one of these egos that you give it a smidge and boy, it gets, feed me, feed me, feed me, hell. And I used to have to drive to meetings with him. I didn't have a car, so I'd have to ask him. He'd drive me to meetings, humble myself. When I was at a meeting with him, and he's talking at the coffee break, I'm standing back there at the literature table. The guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, I turned around, and some starry-eyed newcomer standing there saying, John. I said, yes. You know how humble you are. Drop your eyes and shuffle your feet. He said, I heard you talk the other night. I said, really? He said, do you know you're a miracle? I said, oh, really? What was it I said? He said, oh, you know, man, blah, 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 blah. And he kept on and on and on all through the coffee break, and I just kept getting higher and higher and bigger and bigger and bigger. I finally just floated back down, sat in the seat over there, looked out the window to see my spaceship. I tell you, it's a good thing I was sitting over there where I could see the cross, I'll tell you that. I'd been up there that night. Old Norm's watching me, always watch me. On the way home that night, I'm staring out the window. Man, I'm gone. For all intents and purposes, I'm history. I mean, I'm so magnificent that I have lost all earthly contact with you. I mean, I've risen. Whoa, I'm at that stage where I'm dangerous to me. And he said, what's the matter with you, jackass? You smoking that stuff? And I said, I don't think you understand this, Norm, but I'm a miracle. Old Norm slammed on the brake. Damn near went into the divider and screamed at me. I know you have one of these soft-spoken sponsors. I didn't. You're what? I'm a miracle, Norm. He says, where do you get this nonsense? I said, the guy told me that in AME. He says, you're not a miracle, jackass. He said, Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it. I don't know what that does for all the miracles of the canyon. I can tell you what it's done for me. Kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. You couldn't possibly. Let your imagination soar. Let your egos get up there with mine. Hire some buses. Let's go to Waco. I'm going to do it right this time. I have that type of an ego. I know that. That's why I have to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head. That's why I have to have 4 or 5 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I have to have newcomers to talk to me. That's why I got to do all the things. That's why I have to go to work and be self-supporting through my own contributions. That's why I got to pay my taxes. That's why I got to be current in life. That's why I got to learn to love my wife and my woman and my kids and my grandkids. That's why I got to be willing to give a little just for the hell of giving, expecting nothing in return, what, not even to stay sober here. I got to be willing to do that because my ego will destroy me. And if I don't see you doing it, I won't do it. My sponsor's sober longer than I am. He's busier than I am. The only man I know like that. He loses one of those qualities, he's not my sponsor tomorrow. And the reason is, I don't want to do it. I don't want to. I'm not one of those people who wake up on Thursday and Friday every single week and say, oh, joy, I get to go to the airport and I get to fly to Oklahoma. Oh, joy. No, I get up and say, Jesus Christ. Another trip. Where does it all end? What am I going to do now? Some goof over there. See, I can think anything I want to think as long as I'm packing my bag and going to the airport, for Christ's sake. Getting on the plane and getting off and saying, oh, glad I'm here. Well, have a good weekend. Call it phony if you want, but that's me. You know, I'm not one of them spiritual magnificent giants. You know, I get myself in a lot of trouble through my ego. I do. Benoit knows. She said, watch me. But I don't get in trouble for making mistakes. I get in trouble for defending my mistakes. And I don't defend my mistakes. I don't place blame. I assume the responsibility. I assume the responsibility of the tattered, tore up life that I had before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't blame that on alcohol. I don't blame it on heroin or drugs or anything else. I don't blame it on people, places, and things. I don't blame the things that go wrong with me in Alcoholics Anonymous. My ego gets out of whack and my life gets turned upside down and divorces happen or wives commit suicide or children get on drugs or my mother drinks herself to death or I go business upside down and all these things that go on in life. I don't blame them for it. It's me. I do it. I get to eat it. I get to do it. I created it. My ego has placed me in a position to be damaged. And the thing that has saved me is I'm busy in AA all the time. Got some place to go, something to do, people to see, meetings to go to, sponsors to talk to. Magnificent people to fill my life with joy and love. The old man that I love more than anything in life, the old man Chuck, who was my daddy, gave me more than I'll ever be able to pay. I love that man more than I've ever loved anything in my life. He was the very essence of love to me. And I was telling Benoit, we were talking about it. We were both sitting at the table and I had a couple of fools crying. First time I ever saw him, I wanted to hit him. You know what he did? I'm in the penitentiary. He'd come up and put his arms around me and kiss me. Twenty-five years later, I sit in a room and rock that old man in a rocking chair when he was so sick he couldn't get himself up. I installed a love in him that he installed a love in me. I love that old man. And I sit with him and watched him. Loved him. I didn't bring that to Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. I'm sorry. I didn't bring that kind of stuff with me when I came in here. I brought anger and I brought deceit and guilt, remorse and fear and emptiness. Without love, I had no ability to create emotions. I had no ability to care about anything. I had no gift of tears. I hadn't cried in my entire lifetime. And yet I sit there tonight at a table with Benoit and wiped away the tears that come in my eyes because I thought of somebody that I loved. And memories go, my friend Ed sat there today and told me, man, I remember sitting in Lubbock, Texas 25 years ago. I looked over and saw you and Norm and Chuck. And I had to get up and walk away. These people are so much a part of me. There's so much tradition that goes on here in the canyon about Jim and about the people who have gone before us and the Jack Slaters. I know all those people. I was close to all those people. But if we don't carry on the legacy that left them, they didn't even exist. With Chuck Chamberlain, if I don't try to extend the hand of love that he taught me, then I'm telling you he didn't exist. That he didn't mean anything to me. If I'm trying to tell you that I don't got to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to have a driver's license, I don't have to do the certain things, I don't have to go to meetings, I have to help the newcomer, I don't have to do all these things that Norm taught me, then they didn't exist. If I don't have to pick up the telephone and say to you, the date's open, it's yours, what do you want me to do? Take care. My life is so simple. It's hard for me to explain it to people. I answer, Chuck said to me, you don't even know how to answer the phone. I said, Pompa, you pick it up and say hello. He said, not you. I said, then what do I say? He said, you say if the date's open, it belongs to you. You realize how simple that makes your life? Think about it. That takes care of Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthdays, anniversary, wedding, baptism, whatever. It takes care of everything. See, I belong to you. What you see standing before you tonight is nothing that I created. That God and his infinite power through your example has given me something to become. So, he has made this inside job and turned it inside out. He's taken the rottenness and the filth and the corruption and the degradation and the violence. And he's turned around and made it a gem. Weak little wimp who sits at a dinner table and cries. But you know what that is? That's the image of a man. That's the image of a person who is full of love, who has been given traditions, who have had people walk his life and snatch him out of the thing. One of my favorite stories of all time is Ben-Hur. I don't know how many of you ever saw the movie Ben-Hur, but I sit in that movie and I weep like a baby by one scene. Ben-Hur goes to become all things to all people. And they've captured his mother and put her in the den of the lepers. And she's in the leper seat. He follows his sister, his girlfriend, into her while he's feeding her mother. And he sits there and watches, and he's wants to go see his mother. All of you know that if you touch his foot. And so he broke down and he went into the den of the leper and he put his arm around his mother. And because he loved her so, she was healed of leprosy. On the fourth day of November, 1959, sitting in the den of the lepers, a group of people walked into this den, armed with the love of the fellowship and the dedication of carrying the message to the alcoholics, and so anxious and starved to carry on the message of what they've been given. They wrapped the leper up into the arms of love and healed him. So that 40-some years later, he can stand in a place in Hinton, Oklahoma, at a place called a canyon, and say thank you. Because you see, if it wasn't for people like you, there wouldn't be people like me. There weren't people who'd get up and go to any length to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I wouldn't be here. I've been given much here, so much is demanded of me. One of the last things my pop ever said to me was very simple. He used to always talk. He used to always quote a verse out of the Bible. And I used to sit and listen to him talk about it. He's talking about the carpenter was sitting one time, and Peter came to the carpenter. And the carpenter looked at Peter and said, "Do you love me, Peter?" Peter said, "Yea, Lord." He said, "Then, Peter, tend my sheep." He said, "Do you love me, Peter?" And Peter said, "Yea, Lord." He said, "Tend my sheep." Once upon a time, sitting on a hill in a chair with an old man sitting in my lap, a man I've loved more than anything else, who made it capable and gave me the love that I installed in that beautiful woman I'm married to today, he said to me, "Johnny, do you love me?" I said, "Yes, I do, Papa." He said, "Tend my sheep." That's what we do here. We're not the shepherd. We just tend the sheep. We're like the dogs who keep the pack intact. You really want to know the truth. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Makes me to lie down in green pastures. He restores my soul. I came here so sick in the soul, so empty of love and feeling and God and the things that are so prevalent in Alcoholics Anonymous. So empty of all things. And like an empty vessel, you fill me with all those things by your dedication, by your example, and by your love and your nurturing, and your firm hands, which is measure of love. The discipline that you install in me, that I get up and go when I don't want to go. I do what I don't want to do. I be where I say I'm going to be, and I'm doing what I say I'm going to do. When I walked out of that penitentiary 40 years ago, I said to myself, "Let me come and sit in their meetings. I'll do anything they ask me to do." I can tell you that for 40 years I've done that. I don't know much about a lot of things. I know that I'm a very blessed man. I live in a home with a woman that I have learned to love, that I never knew how to love a person before like that. I never knew how to love a woman. I use women, up to and including coming into Alcoholics Anonymous for a period of time. I love this woman. And today, after all this time in life, I have put into practice what my papa taught me a long time ago. I said to him once upon a time, "Papa, I want to know something." He said, "What do you want to know, son? I'll tell you anything." And I said, "How come you and Mom get along so good? What is it that you do? Do you do anything?" And he said, "Well, it's a very simple thing with me, son." He said, "When I got sober, I went home and told Mrs. C. that if she'd allow me the privilege to love her, I'd never ask her to do another living thing." I'm very proud to tell you tonight, 30-some-odd years later, I understand that and practice that in my home. My wife doesn't even have to cook. She don't have to do the laundry. She don't have to clean the house. She don't have to do nothing. She just has to let me love her. What a bonus it is when she makes a meatloaf. See how simple? It gets so simple here you can't believe it. I love that woman with a love I didn't even know I had till 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, I'm through with relationships because I wasn't good at them. Because I'm too selfish, if you want to know the truth. Too self-centered, too self-absorbed. So I made up my mind I wasn't going to have no more relationship. So I didn't for 2 years. My sponsor, Clancy, would say to me, "Are you seeing anyone?" I'd say, "No." I said, "Good." That way you're not harming anybody. So one time I was in Columbus, Ohio, and I ran into this darling little blonde, and we started communicating over the telephone, and we made a rendezvous. And it was on a Thursday night, and Wednesday night, I sat down with her. I said, "I got to talk to you, Sponge. I don't know how he's going to take this." He says, "What do you want to?" He does. Every time I ask Clancy, I say, "I got to talk to you, man." Everything is dropped. He takes me aside, and we talk. Man, how busy we are at that Wednesday night meeting. We're busy. I mean, there's 1,000 people there asking questions and wanting to grab him. He just said, "Get the hell out of here. Come on, Johnny." He sat down, and he said, What's going on?" And I said, "I'm going on a date tomorrow." He thought about it, you know, kind and loving sponsor that he is. He said, "Well," I said, "what do you think I ought to do?" I said, "You know, there's funny feelings going on here." And he said, "Well," he said, "tell her. Tell her that you've been celibate for a couple of years and really not sure how all this goes on." He says, "And try to be courteous." I said, "Okay." And he said, "And second thought," he said, "what?" He said, "ask her if she puts out." That's my sponsor. I didn't have to ask her. I told you, a young man in an old container. But it's a good life. David was at my wedding. He'd come down, see Karen and I get married. One of the joys of my life. I didn't want to make a big production out of it. We got married on a riverboat. In case anything didn't work, we'd throw her overboard or something like that. It's a good life. Everything. Papa, I'm filled with my daddy tonight. Some reason. I don't know what it is. I've been that way all weekend. I heard Naomi talk. I had to get away from here. I had to go be by myself. I just had to do that. And I went down and sat in the cabin and I stayed there for a while and I came back. My papa used to make a little statement and I want to share it with you. He said, if you're wondering, he'd say, "You know, it's an amazing thing, Johnny." He said, "Everything in your life that's necessary for your fulfillment will be given to you. All you got to do is practice the principles of this program and try to give away what you've been found here for free and for fun." He always put the emphasis for free and for fun on it. And he says, "And everything that will hinder your fulfillment in life will be removed through you for no effort of your own. All the requirements are you practice these principles to the best of your ability and do it for free and for fun. Make no day too long or no trip too far. No task too difficult. No place too sinister that you won't reach your hand in there in that den and pull them out of there." And so it's come to pass. Everything in my life today as I stand before you is absolute and total fulfillment. I live with a woman I adore and worship and love. A great member of Alcoholics Anonymous, this woman is. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I have people that I love. I have learned all these things here with you. I'm a blessed man. What more is there? You know, once upon a time when I was new, I used to think, man, I'd see people up there talking at them podiums, and I'd say, man, I got to get somewhere, man. Man, I get up there. God, I got to get somewhere. I got to go somewhere. And I'd say that to Papa. God, I got to get somewhere. He says, "You're already there." I didn't understand that. You know, you don't understand that simplicity. I mean, you're keen. You know, when I quit trying to go anywhere, I've been all over the world. The most amazing thing that I know of. All over the world I've been. I don't want to go nowhere. And I go all over the world. It's goofy. You know, when I quit trying to get anything, I've been given it all. Don't try to get nothing. This ain't a getting nothing place here. This ain't a getting place here. This is a giving place here. You give here, and you give here, and you give here, and expect, without expectation, nothing coming back. You just give it. You just put it out there. And I'm here to tell you that the treasures of life will be bestowed on you. That you can lay down at night and sleep without nightmares. That you can live in a home with peace, and that you can be anxious to see people that you love. And you can sit down and shed a tear for what you've been given here. And you'd be so grateful sometime that you just got to go off somewhere and sit. Just sit and be still. There's a verse. It says very simply, be still and know that I am. Be still and know there's God, because that's it. If that's meditation, then that's what's happened to me today. All I have to tell you tonight, as I sit here 40 years later, after sitting in that den of inequity, that penitentiary that I was in, but I tell you this, too, I've been thinking about this. Larry, the coach, was picked up by John and taken over to University of Oklahoma, Barry Switzer's alma mater at the Hall of Fame. And I thought that was neat. My baby David picked me up at the airport, drove me up to the gates of the penitentiary over here in Hinton. There you are. I was like that. Something wrong with that somewhere along the line. But then we went out and played golf. And you know what I was thinking? There were people walking on the other side of the fence over there. And I'm playing golf with three guys that I love to death, people who are close to me as my own kids. And I'm thinking about them guys walking, and I wave at a couple of them. Long walk from that fence to that golf course. Ain't no way to get. There ain't no buses over there saying, I'm going to take you to the golf course over that fence. You can't get from there to here. That's what they tell you. Can't do it. You can't do it. Nobody reckons with the will of God. It's a long way from a cell in solitary confinement, a maximum security penitentiary where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you.